This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services is making headlines again. This time it's because of the resignation of the state's Medicaid director, Carol Steckel. She's leaving after only 8 months on the job. DHHS Secretary Aldana Voss had previously called recruitment of Steckel the first big victory we had at HHS. Steckel said she's resigning to take a job in Florida, but this becomes the latest in a string of headline-grabbing incidents at that department. Joining us now to talk about it is Joe Neff, investigative reporter for the News and Observer. Welcome back, Joe.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.
All right, tell us what happened here.
Well, Carol Steckel, as you mentioned, was brought in to lead the effort to reform Medicaid in North Carolina. She came in at the beginning of the McCrory administration, was paid $210,000 a year, higher than the budgeted position because of the experience that the director said that she brought to this position. And 8 months later, she submitted a letter of resignation and is moving into the private sector.
And why does she say she's leaving now?
Well, it's unclear. She said that she's it's an opportunity for her to move back into the private sector. There are I'm sure there are other reasons behind the scenes there, but Ms. Steckel and the Secretary Voss are not talking about it.
All right. How big a loss is this to the state?
Well, if you put it in context, that there has been a lot of turnover there at the department. The state health director left earlier this year, citing differences with the administration. The state's top dentist was fired. Secretary Vosh's first chief of staff that she hired left after a month. So, granted, the Department of Health and Human Services is a big department, $14 billion budget, and 18,000 employees. It's a difficult place to run, but this seems to be the McCrory administration is getting off to a tougher start than usual here.
Well, let's talk about some of the particulars. We talked about the former chief of staff who received more than $37,000 in a settlement.
This is very curious. My friend Sarah Ovaska at the Justice Policy Center broke this story. Thomas Adams was hired to be chief of staff at a salary of $155,000 a year. A month later, he leaves, and the department entered into a severance with him, paid him $37,000, $37,227. Now, they classified it in their accounting system as a court settlement, but there was no litigation or complaint ever filed. And what's very curious about this is state employees almost never get severance pay like this. And especially Thomas Adams was not a regular state employee with the Civil Service Protections of the State Personnel Act. He was a political hire subject to serving at the pleasure of the governor. So it's a very unusual situation, to say the least.
So what do we know about his dismissal or his resignation, the reason for leaving and the reason for this big settlement? This is state money. Can we find out what happened?
Well, we have asked, and Sarah Vasca has asked, and they are the Department of Health and Human Services is sheltering behind the State Personnel Act, saying this is a personnel situation, and they don't have to tell us.
Wow. So there's that. And then the firing of Rebecca King after 35 years as the sort of the state's top dentist. Remind us what happened there.
Dr. King, like you say, had been with the state for 35 years, and she felt that the Secretary Vosh did not fight hard enough for funds for the dental program. And when the budget was cut by the legislature, she did not come up with a plan. This is according to the department, on how to implement that budget cut, what to cut, which employees to leave. And instead, in a staff meeting, she challenged the secretary and told her, apparently, that the secretary had not done enough to protect the dental program. And she was fired as a result of this, and the firing letter was quite scathing, saying that she was insubordinate and not a team player, and her conduct was reprehensible, and for addressing the secretary in that way during a staff meeting.
So this is the Department of Health and Human Services that's going to help guide us to this transition into the Affordable Care Act, which goes into effect next month in a week. Mm-hmm. This department sounds like it's in disarray at a very crucial moment. What impact is this having on the department and state government as we move to this very important threshold?
Well, I don't know about the Affordable Care Act, but I do know that the big issue right now that is reverberating around the state is that the department has come on with two new computer systems. One basically for food stamps, and the other is payments to Medicaid providers. And we've written about this, that some people applying for food stamps or emergency food aid are waiting months to get this their application processed, and the same for many Medicaid providers, doctors or hospitals, maybe going weeks or months without getting paid. Now, the department says that they're working overtime trying to get these two new systems up and running, but if you talk to doctors or social service agencies around the state, they're not very happy with it right now.
All right, Joe, as always, thank you for talking with us.
Sure. Good to be here.
Joe Neff, investigative reporter for the News and Observer. In other news, Republican State Senate Leader Phil Berger announced that he will not challenge U.S. Democratic Senator Kay Hagan for her seat, and that leaves Republican House Speaker Tom Tillis as her main competition. Joining us now to talk about that is News and Observer political reporter John Frank. Hello, John.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Why is Phil Berger not running?
He cited a couple of reasons. Most in particular is that he wants to continue his work in the state Senate. Berger is widely seen as the most powerful lawmaker in the state right now. He drove the agenda that the Republicans put in place this last session, leading on issues like taxes, education, and election reforms. And he says he's got some unfinished business, and he wants to see these proposals along before he jumps to another ship.
All right, and we've been waiting to hear this announcement one way or another for a while, but somebody who's already told us what he's doing is Tom Tillis. What does this announcement mean for him?
Well, the political observers I talked to say this is a huge sigh of relief for Tillis' campaign. Berger would have been a formidable opponent if the two had gone head-to-head atop the Republican primary. It also would have colored a good bit of the legislative action next year. The primary would come, you know, right before lawmakers reconvene here in Raleigh. So what this means for Tillis going forward is that he's the most prominent name at the top of the Republican primary ticket. Now, he does face some competition from two other lesser-known candidates, Greg Brannon of Cary and Heather Grant of Wilkesboro. And we could see Reverend Mark Harris enter the race officially October 2nd, and possibly other candidates jump in. The race is still being molded, and the field's not quite set.
And Tillis is still the front runner when it comes to raising campaign money, right?
He is out in front, but it's early. Tillis raised about $278,000 in his first month as a candidate. He announced in late May and spent all of June fundraising, and had about $255,000 on hand. The only other announced candidate at that point was Greg Brannon, the obstetrician from Cary. He had only raised $121,000 and had just about $50,000 in the bank. He's running a very small, low-profile campaign right now. A thing to watch will be how Tillis raises money going forward, particularly with Berger out of the race. Berger weighing that possible candidacy surely froze up some folks who were looking to give money one way or the other, but just weren't quite sure who was going to be in the race and who they wanted to give to. So with Berger out of the way, that could open up some opportunities for Tillis, and the candidates will report their latest fundraising numbers early next month.
Phil Berger has not endorsed Tom Tillis, right?
He didn't, and he and I did a song and dance during an interview yesterday on this. He went out of his way to avoid saying anything good, but also avoid saying anything bad about Tillis' campaign. A Senate colleague of his, one of his top lieutenants and a budget writer, is considering entering the race. That's Pete Brunstetter, a lawyer out of Winston-Salem. Berger said he would endorse Brunstetter if he decides to run. Now, if Brunstetter doesn't run, would he endorse Tillis? Well, Berger wouldn't quite answer that question when I asked.
What about Kay Hagan? She looked very vulnerable, notably before the legislative session began. Last time I looked, her fortune seemed to be improving somewhat. Where does she stand in all of this?
As the incumbent, she certainly comes in with a few advantages. She's sitting on $4.2 million in her campaign account right now, which is less than half of what she's expected to raise to mount a competitive campaign come this time next year. But she is coming in with polls showing her above all Republican competitors at this point. These are, of course, early numbers that are likely to change once Republicans start spending some money. We're expecting a lot of outside groups and even the national parties to play a significant role in this race with, you know, TV ads, mailers. It's expected to get quite dirty, and all the candidates' numbers will surely change in the months ahead.
All right, John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Frank, a reporter for the News and Observer. Just ahead, a photographer brings his exploration of consumerism in America to Raleigh. We'll talk about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.